You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Pharmacy Podcast. We have a special interview with the National Community Pharmacists Association CEO, Douglas Hoy. And he said that independent pharmacies are encouraged by President Trump's last-minute decision to revive last year's proposed rebate rule as part of his package of an executive order on drug pricing. NCPA issued the following statement on Doug's behalf. After talking with the White House late last Friday, we are encouraged by the president's focus on PBMs and their shady practices when it comes to rebates. He clearly understands that the current system is murky and inefficient, allowing PBMs to deal secretly with insurance plans and drug companies to mask their true cost of prescription drugs. He did not mention pharmacy DIR fees specifically, but we are hopeful that the administration will deal with this shell game in the rulemaking process. It is important to note that the agencies must now take his broad directives and turn them into regulations. This provides the NCPA with an excellent chance to deal once and for all with pharmacy DIR fees. We will continue to advocate with the agencies to eliminate these unfair, unstable fees, which CMS admits rose 45,000% in recent years. DIR fees are driving small business independent pharmacies out of business, and they are driving up the cost of prescription drugs with sharply higher out-of-pocket costs for patients. If the president's goal is to reduce prescription drug costs for Americans, then pharmacy DIR fees must be eliminated. That's our goal, and it should be his goal. Pharmacy Podcast Nation, welcome back to the Pharmacy Podcast Network. This is truly a historical time in pharmacy. There is much happening. I'm excited to be putting these podcasts out to you on a more frequent basis. We're doing about, I think we're up to a 6 per week now. So it's relevant that there's lots of information that's coming out to the marketplace, and we want to help cover that information. There was a letter that was written by the CEO of the NCPA, the National Community Pharmacists Association, and it was insurance companies are using their prescription drug management divisions, or PBMs, to raise prescription prices on seniors at the pharmacy counter using a secretive payment system called pharmacy DIR fees. Now, if you're a consumer, you may not understand that, but basically, it's a underhanded way of collecting additional monies that has nothing to do with your healthcare. It has nothing to do with supporting pharmacy as a healthcare entity. It's really profit driven. That's pretty frustrating for someone that's been in the industry since 2004, who's finally understood the complexity of what pharmacy benefit managers are doing. And they're not all bad. There is a value to a PBM, but it's now become drastically lopsided. I would like to welcome to the Pharmacy Podcast Nation, Mr. Doug Hoy. Welcome back to the Pharmacy Podcast.
Thanks, Todd. Great to be here.
I tell you what, we've kind of followed each other's careers. I remember when I first entered pharmacy and heard about you. You were vice president of the NCPA. And when I heard you speak, I was like, why isn't he CEO of the NCPA? And then it happened within about 6 months after that. And it's been a good thing for the National Community Pharmacists Association.
You're exceedingly kind, Todd. You're exceedingly kind, but thank you for that compliment. And it's been, I mean, we were just chatting before, it's been remarkable to see the growth of your company. I mean, it's had several iterations, and it really looks like you've hit a sweet spot here and really grown. So kudos to you for providing this valuable service to the industry.
I thank you for that. It's a dream come true. I've wanted to be a place where we can gather the voices of the pharmacy industry literally and market them correctly. And there's no books on how to podcast in pharmacy. So maybe I should write that book, but it's been a pleasure. It's been an honor to stand with pharmacists and in associations. Sheila Marquette with the NAESP has been part of our network for some time, and Chad Wurz broadcasts his Senior Arcs Radio through our network. And we've done things with the APHA recently with Scott Knorr, and now I'm talking with the CEO of the NCPA. So I'm rolling around very excited this week. So this is the place I want to be.
I'm glad we could add to it. So thanks. So.
You wrote a letter to President Trump that was very impactful to the internal family of pharmacy. And we've talked before about your philosophies of how what NCPA does really isn't just about community pharmacy. So I want to turn over the mic to you so that you can really dive into not only this letter, but some strategy that the NCPA has in play that's going to impact all of healthcare.
Yeah, thanks, Todd. And I'll start with the letter. So the letter to President Trump was about, it essentially said, Dear President Trump, we understand that you're considering coming out with some orders that would affect rebates. And that was a proposed rule back last in spring of 2019 that was under very, very serious consideration that would put the drug rebates, it would put the discounts at the pharmacy counter. So instead of those rebates going in to the middlemen, to the PBMs, to decide how much of that gets divvied up, and the rebates would go straight from the manufacturer to the consumer, which is where they should be going anyway. When the manufacturer is giving up dollars on a rebate, the patient should benefit, but we in the pharmacy world know that we have the middlemen, the PBMs in the middle, who are taking some dollars off the top of the deck and off the bottom as well. So as the letter that we sent this week said, Dear Mr. President, if you're thinking about rebates, we will not and cannot support rebates unless pharmacy DIRs, elimination of pharmacy DIRs, are part of the plan. And in our minds, you shouldn't even think about doing anything with rebates unless pharmacy DIR are included. As pharmacy DIR, they're increasing prices for consumers. The consumers who use their benefit, they're paying more than they would otherwise. And so pharmacy DIRs are increasing costs for consumers, and they are destroying retail pharmacies, not just independents, that's who we represent, independents in the regional chains, but the big guys too. Just a little factoid, last year the worst performing stock in the Dow was Walgreens. Over a 5-year period, the worst performing stock in the Dow was Walgreens. And you can also even look at, you know, a CVS, even with its PBM arm, its stock's been beat up over the last several years as well. So the pharmacy DIRs, again, they're crushing my constituents, but they're also hurting the big chains as well. And so the letter to the president said, we have to have both. We have to have elimination of pharmacy DIR. And I'll come up for air here because you may have another question, but it would not be the first time that the White House has had a chance to fix pharmacy DIR, but I'll pause.
Yeah, it's understandable because it's changed. I remember when the concept of DIR fees came out, it was attached back to the star rating system of how well you're caring for a group of patients associated with a network. That morphed into the original definition of the math side of DIR, which was this myriad of meanings, including the cost of pharmacy pays to participate in that PBM's plan. And then there's an adjustment to maximal allowable cost, and then the contracted rate, and then the plan reimbursement. And then 3 months later, you get banged on the head for $10,000 because of your DIR fees that caught up with you. It's confusing. Like I have not been able to follow. I thought I had it nailed down based on some of the writings of Dr. Adam Fine through his blog over at Drug Channels, but I still to this day cannot wrap my brain around what that means. And what that's doing is it's putting pharmacists and pharmacies in communities where they have no other healthcare provider out of business. So when I know that there are organizations reaching out to administration and CMS and the powers that be to explain that, I have to think that they understand what's going on at this point, even the surface of it, of how this is going to impact our healthcare providers. And during the pandemic, putting pharmacists out of business, that's teetering on causing danger to public safety. So, and we've heard about this in the Wall Street Journal. We've heard about it in the New York Times. So I think the bubbling and the boiling of this pot of what we're sitting in, you know, we're going to have to have some special injunction or something happen to get the attention of the right people to just get it to stop.
Yeah. Related to that, we agree. So we actually were able to work with CMS, and in the winter of 2018, so less than 2 years ago, CMS put forth a proposed rule that would eliminate pharmacy DIR. That went forward, it went through the comments period. Secretary Azar supported the language. He attended the NCPA fly-in, the legislative fly-in that spring of 2019. And he received a thundering ovation in support of eliminating pharmacy DIR. Unfortunately, it hit a buzzsaw at the White House. Some staff members, high-ranking staff members who are no longer there, deep-sixed it. They killed it. And since then, the members of Congress have been somewhat timid to touch it because they saw the White House, knife it. So they're like, well, I don't know if I want to go forward with this if the White House is just going to kill whatever I put forward. Now, there are some new players, as I mentioned. And so we're going back to some of those same champions and saying, look, it's a different cast of characters now. And, you know, maybe there's a chance that the White House wouldn't sabotage it like they did this last time, like they did in May of 2019. This rebate rule, which affects the manufacturers the most, and they're actually in support of taking rebates and putting them at the pharmacy counter, but it's the insurance plans and the PBMs that are opposed to it, not surprisingly. The same cast of characters killed that as well. And so again, the new cast, maybe there's a chance that it gets resurrected.
I've read reports, Doug, where we're able to dig down into data for Medicaid systems here in Pennsylvania. Eugene DePascal, who's our general auditor, is digging into PBM reform.
Great guy. Yep. Yeah,
he is amazing. He's aggressive, so he knows what's going on. And then obviously the state of Ohio has been a champion of changing the game in pharmacy, and also Florida with the Sunshine report that Access 3 advisors had opened up that whole can of worms in the data. But what I'm wondering from your perspective with the NCPA is, in the interim of some of this waiting game and positioning and trying to get the right people to pay attention at even at the White House level, what can the community pharmacy do today? I have an idea of what this answer is, but I also want to hear some coaching from you for the listeners that do own pharmacies, for where we're at right now in this day and age, especially when they're experiencing financial fatigue based on COVID-19.
Yeah, some of the things as far as the pharmacy DIR, they can continue to just be a constant drumbeat to legislators. We don't know if there will be a new administration next year, but even whether the current administration is reelected or there's a new administration, we need legislators to understand that during this pandemic, pharmacies, first of all, pharmacies are essential businesses, period. Whether it's during a pandemic, whether it's during regular times, pharmacies are essential businesses. We have been formally deemed essential businesses during the pandemic, which is great. And we have our members, pharmacies, frontline healthcare workers have stood and delivered day after day after day after day after day during this pandemic. And for the most part, it's been a pretty thankless job. Every once in a while, we'll get a shout out, which we appreciate. And, pharmacists are there to help patients. But if there's another pandemic, if there's not something done to change pharmacy DIR, and this is a message for the legislators, we're not going to be here. We're not going to be around to save the day, to be that safety net for our communities if something's not done differently and pharmacy DIR isn't eradicated. We believe, and NCPA has been very vocal, that we have to change the pharmacy payment model. We've got to change the entire pharmacy payment model. The current payment model is complex, convoluted, it's confusing. Consumers have no idea what they're going to pay at the counter. Pharmacists have no idea what they're going to get paid. And it's absurd. The only entity that has that perfect information are the PBMs, and they're the ones raking in the cash. So we've got to change the pharmacy payment model for fair dispensing and also for value of our services, to get paid for the services that we're providing. And so for the legislators, especially tied to the pandemic, we've been here, we are here, but we're not going to be here the next time. We may not be here the next time if we don't do something now to change it. For your state legislators, the state and employers, they need to change Medicaid. And you mentioned some states. You mentioned Ohio. Pennsylvania continues to try to get reforms through. Other states I'd add would be West Virginia, Kentucky, as a few other states that have really done some very progressive things with rooting out the middleman who's just adding costs to the system and instead replacing it with something much more simple, much more understandable, saving money, paying the pharmacy something reasonable, and then saving those dollars and using them for whatever that state needs. Maybe it needs to fix a bridge or build a road or hire some teachers or hire some firemen, whatever they need those dollars for that right now are winding up in Rhode Island and St. Louis and Minneapolis.
So what I'm interested in understanding as well, so the Hill had an article out, White House considers drug pricing executive order, prompting the GOP pushback. And it goes through a little bit about the whole reason for decisions around the Affordable Care Act, how that might be dissected and drug prices are in it. But the public, and when I'm at barbecues or I'm talking to my mother or I'm talking to a friend who looks to me, hey, you're in pharmacy, what about drug pricing or something? I always try to slow them down and let them know this isn't about drug pricing. This is about how a pharmacy, a big chain or a small privately owned, how they're getting paid and then what's happening in that puzzle. And of course, deer in headlights at that point and nobody's paying attention. And even pharmacy owners aren't quite sure, as I'm echoing of what you're saying, is they're not sure how they're getting paid, what they're getting paid. So the reform to change the entire payment model, does that include a performance base where we can show outcomes? We can show lowering, diabetes outcomes or negative outcomes, to catch adverse reactions, to catch allergies, to perform a pharmacogenomics test and show the physician through electronic health record what we're going to avoid in the future based on the top 3 to 6 medications that a patient can take. Like, what's the idea around what you believe could come that you're proposing to legislators that you can show them, here's what we're suggesting this model should look like?
Yeah, great question. And I will add that it's not just to legislators that we're proposing these changes of changing the pharmacy payment model, because I personally believe that legislation has an important role to play. I almost liken it to, sports metaphor. I think of legislation and regulation from football terms as your defense. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have a good defense, you're not going to win a championship. It's hard to think of too many Super Bowl winners that didn't have at least a solid defense. Some of them, you're Pennsylvania, so, going way back, Pittsburgh Steel Curtain,
right?
85 Bears, New York Giants and the Lawrence Taylor Giants, et cetera, Baltimore Ravens, et cetera. But you have to also play in the marketplace. You have to be able to have a marketplace solution, and that's your offense. And so from a legislative standpoint, you have to be able to say, look, we, quit eroding our, using our tax dollars against us for, these government subsidized mail order. But on the offense side, we would say some CPSN, Community Pharmacy Enhanced Services Network, CPESN, is the offense, is an example of offense. So that goes to your question. So a model could look like, fair fee for dispensing, whatever that fee is, something reasonable, not below your acquisition cost, which 10 to 15% of prescription claims from PBMs are below acquisition cost. So at least some payment, at least above your acquisition cost. And then, so that's sort of your baseline. That's where you start. That's your floor instead of your ceiling. And then as your pharmacy and your pharmacists are higher performers with better outcomes, as you alluded to, then you get paid more. And one important thing to think about from a pharmacist standpoint, I'm a pharmacist and love pharmacy and been, it's my professional life, is we tend to get ahead of the payers. Because there's so much untapped potential from pharmacists that we get excited. And you mentioned pharmacogenomics, you mentioned diabetes outcomes, A1Cs, et cetera. Those are all things that pharmacists are 100% capable of doing. But the payer may say, I really need a network of pharmacies that can deliver this inhaler to these patients who don't have a way to get to the pharmacy or a way to access that medication. Or they may say, what I really need is someone who could do blood pressure checks and report those back to someone so we can monitor the blood pressure of my employees because I'm having, too many costs of heart attacks, CHF, strokes, et cetera. I mean, the needs of the employer, that something they're willing to pay for, may be something more elementary to us as pharmacists, but that's what they're looking for. So I guess I would encourage listeners and other pharmacists not to leap over the needs of the employers, the payers, and eventually those needs will get to some of the more sophisticated things that pharmacists can do. But again, to your question, the baseline is fair fee for dispensing and the services that go with maximizing the use of that medication. And then as your pharmacy is a higher performer, you're doing a better job with outcomes and quality measures, then you get paid on top of that.
A community pharmacy can reach out to any of your legislators, your state representatives, and educate them. If you have time, maybe put one of your techs on it to get them on the phone. But COVID-19 pandemic continues to change things in our country. And the response efforts of our healthcare providers is really centered at these community pharmacies. And they're showing this potential to improve these outcomes of other things that are taxing communities. The hospital systems that are taxed with just basic emergency room things are obviously being increased because of the pandemic. And when I think of what pharmacists are able to do with testing, with follow-up, with other instances, questions that are going to come from the community, that it needs to prove to our lawmakers and to payers and even to employers that if you engage and work with your local community pharmacies, you're going to care for your workforce better as well as the community in general better. So, Doug, I'm all for the payment changes. I'm nervous in the interim as I look and I watch what community pharmacy is going through, especially with their own staff, pharmacy techs that are the right hand, their pharmacists that are, you know, these full-time employees, their health, keeping them healthy through this situation, and engaging and not waiting for things to change, but just taking control. I know that I love Gabe Trahan. He's just an amazing guy. He's so creative. The red shoe wearer. What are some of the programs that the NCPA has helped to kind of come up with and create, which I consider move forward programs in this world, regardless of us waiting, to be able to supplement some of the income of an independently owned pharmacy?
Yeah. Yeah. And Gabe's on the NCPA staff and works on our front end. And you're right. He's not only creative, but very entertaining to listen to. Some of the things that NCPA has put together to increase revenue beyond the dispensing, we actually put together a series of articles that we call the Sir Thrival series. And we started those last winter, and we're still in the midst of putting out articles, again, Sir Thrival, so not, I don't like to see, oh, how do we make independence survive? I don't want to hear just survival. I want to hear surviving and thriving. And the series of articles has looked at whether it's how to look at ways to lower your cost of goods, manage inventory, look at your third-party contracts, but it's also looked at diversifying your revenue. So CPSN is one example for diversifying your revenue, and there's a series of different services within CPSN. Other areas, of course, are immunizations, whether that be well beyond flu immunizations, travel vaccines, long-acting medications for mental health is another. We have some pilots that we are working on for diabetes through the CDC, and that has some opportunities there. And then testing, you know, COVID-19 testing, that's been a great development over the last couple of, actually 3 months, that pharmacists have been given the authorization, authority to order and administer COVID-19 tests. The billing is still being sorted out, although a number of pharmacists have been able to get access to the machines needed to do the diagnostic tests and the PPE to protect their patient and their staff and their themselves. And that's been very successful for a number of our folks. And we think that the testing opportunity is one that is perfect for pharmacies, because it accelerates the value. It accelerates the showing the value of the pharmacist, and it's a desperate need that states, communities, and our entire country have. And pharmacists can, you know, put on their cape and put the S on their chest and save the day when they're given the right tools for testing. But on the NCPA website, we have a long list of ways to diversify your revenue. And I would recommend that folks go to that list, pick out the one, start one at a time so you focus on it that fits your community and your interests and your practice the best, and see where it takes you.
I'm going to put that link in the show notes, Doug. So if you are listening, you're jogging, you're driving, don't worry about it. That information will be in our show notes. 90% of people living in the United States are within 5 miles of a community pharmacy and have access to a pharmacist. They're able to see their pharmacist 9 times versus 1 time seeing their primary care. So being able to prepare for vaccination, immunizations, back to school, really any of these things we know pharmacists are capable of doing. Looking forward to expanding the role of the pharmacist in a position to get paid for some of these additional services. I've worked with Ken Sternfeld and his team with the concierge pharmacist, and they're going in and making relationships with primary care, doing chart reviews for some of their the most chronic of their patients that are taking 6, 8, 14, 16 medications, and really trying to help the patient. And that's really what it's about. I mean, I'm all for the pharmacist. However, I know who the boss is. The boss is our patients, and they're the ones that need our help more than anyone. And if we don't get this payment thing fixed, we're going to lose pharmacies that are caring for our community. And no one wants to see that happen. And you and I, as cheerleaders and advocates for this business, we know the impact. But hey, I'm excited about the hope of pharmacy. I think that that things are changing. It's slow, and I'm impatient, but I'm a glass half full guy.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way. I mean, for those who've seen me speak before, I don't use this every time, but I've talked at least at a couple of keynotes at our annual meeting about, you know, pharmacy is at a crossroads. You know, I've been hearing that since I was in pharmacy school, which was a while ago. Pharmacy is at a crossroads. You know, it's going to change tomorrow. Pharmacy is at a crossroads. And I decided, after sort of mocking that, you know, because I've been hearing it forever, I've decided that pharmacy is actually at a crossroads. It's just a really, really wide intersection, and the cars move really slowly. But the cars are moving. And if you don't get out of the way, if you're not moving too, you're going to get flattened. You know, it's slow and it's wide and you can see it coming. But if you don't move, you're going to get steamrolled. And so I will say that I think on the COVID, the pandemic, I think it's going to accelerate the speed of moving through that crossroads, that intersection. And so some of the trends, both favorable and unfavorable, that pharmacy has seen and is seeing, I think we're going to see some acceleration of that over the next couple of years.
I agree. There are states that are further ahead than others, but there's been recognition of pharmacists playing a very critical role during this pandemic and reaching patients for reasons that other healthcare providers just didn't have the capacity to do. And, you know, the federal legislation with the Social Security Act to recognize pharmacists under Medicare Part B as eligible providers that allow for that broad reimbursement of pharmacy delivery services is going to continue to play out. But that's also exciting to know that there's sunshine that's going to come from a pandemic for pharmacists specifically. And it needs to be recognized. And like I said, if you're listening, you own a pharmacy, you know, visiting or having your state rep visit your pharmacy once a quarter, twice a year, once a year. If you're not in front of them, then they're going to forget about you. But if they realize the impact that it's going to have on their constituents and on their people and on their community, and you can tie that back to that specific individual, I think that's very powerful. And it's also an opportunity for you to shine in the community by getting your local paper involved. But you have to continue to market yourself. You cannot wait for NCPA or APHA or ASCP or any of these associations by themselves to do this. They're an association that you're to be a member of, and therefore you need to be supporting those organizations, but you also need to be marketing this messaging yourself to your legislators and to your lawmakers and to your big employers. There's no reason you can't reach out to the largest employer in your community, probably your school or a hospital system, go down from there and find out the next one, someone making brake pads or something or whatever, and get them to come to your pharmacy to let them understand what kind of impact you'll make, not only to their employees and to their families, but also to the community. Have to market yourself.
Hey, Todd, if I can add to that, because that's exactly right. That, I mean, so the trade associations like us, our job is to help facilitate an environment for pharmacies to use their business skills and their clinical skills to be successful. But, you know, the pharmacy, they have to decide, you know, what they're going to, you know, the cost of goods. They have some influence in deciding their cost of goods. Their take it or leave it contracts shoved down our throats from the PBMs. But as long as the PBMs have a network of pharmacies, they're going to keep on, you know, providing lousy contracts. And, you know, that's not against the law to provide a lousy contract if people keep signing it, even though it's a take it or leave it lousy contract. Understand there's no choice but to sign it. But your point on reaching out to the community and reaching out to legislators, state and federal, that requires some work, but that investment is worth it. And the last thing I'd add to that is humanize, when you reach out, humanize what you're doing. You know, because when all of us start talking in our pharmacy wonk talk, AWP minus, WAC, SMAC, MAC, their eyes glaze over. They don't know what we're talking about. But when you can put it in human terms, they understand Mrs. Smith. They understand Mrs. Smith couldn't get her prescription. And you hopped on your snowmobile in a blizzard and drove it to her. They understand that. It'd be great for them to see, to hear from Mrs. Smith too. Yes, Miss, I'm so grateful for pharmacist Jones for bringing this prescription to me. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was going to call an ambulance to come get me. I mean, those are powerful type of stories. All pharmacists have stories like that. And those are the stories that we have to tell, because just going with PBMs are putting us out of business, that's part of the story, but it has to be humanized as well, to help that legislator or member of the media or employer understand that that's bad for them. You know, for that pharmacy to be gone has real bad repercussions for them and their employees or constituents.
Absolutely. Well, I enjoyed having you. We have to have you back more often than what we've done. I'll definitely be reaching out to your team, who I really enjoy working with. Jack and Andy, a shout out to you two for really putting this together. I appreciate you. But there's work to be done, and I'm ready to help out however I can.
Appreciate it, Todd. And yeah, I echo the shout out to Jack and Andy. They do a great job. And yeah, and to your listeners, one of the things, just during this pandemic, you know, pharmacists have stepped forward. We have been essential and frankly saved the day many times. So it's a proud moment for me as a pharmacist to be able to represent thousands and thousands of pharmacists and see what we've done to help keep this country going during a pretty challenging time.
Absolutely. Everyone, please stay safe. You know, reach out to us, reach out to the NCPA if you're needing something specific that we can help you with. We've been getting lots of tweets and LinkedIn interaction and emails regarding some of the specialty podcasts that we've done on disease states. We have a new series on sickle cell. We have a new series on diversity and racism and how pharmacists can lead in that as well. Special episode that's going to be followed up on racism with Dr. Taylor and Dr. Hardy, which I'm excited about. But stay in touch with the NCPA and Pharmacy Podcast. And Doug, I thank you once again for being our guest today.
Appreciate it, Todd. Take care.
You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network. We love pharmacists. We'll do everything we can to help you as your number one fan. And as always, thank you for listening to the Pharmacy Podcast.